Dio misericordioso, che per mezzo del tuo figlio nato dalla Vergine hai redento il mondo.
Well, the Pope was in Ephesus, or the region once known as Ephesus in Turkey, celebrating a Mass in honor of the Virgin Mary earlier today. This is an ongoing story about the Pope's visit to Turkey, which has become a bigger story than it probably would have been, and it would have been a huge story to begin with, because of the Pope's recent comments about Islam. We're going to be talking about the Pope's visit to Turkey as it continues to unfold during the first half hour of Issues Etc. audio open lines. We also have a CNN story on the importance of Jerusalem to Christians, Jews, and Muslims. I have a few thoughts on that story. And if time permits, an update on the tragedy in Darfur here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. You can join us for this first half hour and for the entire 3 hours of Issues Etc. today as we come to you live Wednesday, the 29th of November. Well, the screen says it's Tuesday, November 28th. I don't know how that is, but it's actually 29th of November, Wednesday, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. In 25 minutes, Janice Krause is going to join us. We're going to talk about several issues. The rise of unwed motherhood or illegitimate children, however you want to talk about it. The decline or the apparent decline in teen pregnancies. I think perhaps it might be a decline in teen births rather than pregnancies. There's a new, or at least hopes for a new, oral contraceptive for men, and the over-the-counter sale of Plan B, the morning after pill. We're going to talk with Janice Krause of Concerned Women for America about all three of those issues. At 4 o'clock, Mark Tooley joins us. Rick Warren has been much the subject in the last 2 weeks of talk of journalism. He went to Syria. He made a trip, among other countries, made some statements there that got him in a little bit of hot water with his evangelical supporters. We'll talk with Mark Tooley, who wrote a column called Purpose-Driven Terrorism at 4 o'clock. And then at 4:30, Jeff Dunn and Craig Bubeck join us. We're going to talk about Dan Brown's worldview. They've co-authored the new book, The Gospel According to Dan Brown. The last 45 minutes of Issues Etc. today is audio open lines. We're going to talk about the war on Christmas and the Democratic and Republican presidential hopefuls for 2008 in the last 45 minutes, audio open lines. Our call-in numbers again, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I am personally surprised that the Pope actually made the visit to Turkey, but then again, he is the Pope. If anyone can arrange it, he could probably arrange it under heavy security. He's making this visit that was going to be, or at least planned to be, pastoral in order to forge a bond with the primate of Constantinople, now Istanbul, in the Eastern Orthodox Church. But it's turned political, and he's had to do quite a bit of diplomatic work while he's there in that Muslim country. For the latest on the Pope's visit to Turkey, let's listen to this report from CNN.
If Turks were hoping Pope Benedict would change his tone, that is what they got during his first day in Turkey. The Pope said he was embarking on a mission of dialogue, brotherhood, and reconciliation. And as a sign that he really meant it, he told the Prime Minister that he now supports Turkey's bid to join the European Union. That was seen as an important gesture because before becoming Pope, he had opposed it, citing those same cultural and religious differences he is now trying to bridge. To ease the anger in Turkey and much of the Muslim world over his perceived criticism of Islam, the Pope also met the top Islamic authority in this predominantly Muslim country, Ali Bardakoglu, who echoed the Pope's words of reconciliation. But he also rejected the claim that Islam was a religion spread by the sword, as the Pope had appeared to suggest 2 months ago.
Giderek tırmandığını,
insulting Islam, he said, breeds violence. It was a veiled but pointed criticism of Benedict sitting right next to him. The Pope did not directly respond, sticking to his prepared statement instead.
The best way forward is via authentic dialogue between Christians and Muslims, based on truth, and inspired by a sincere wish to know one another better, respecting differences, and recognizing what we have in common.
On the streets here, a mixture of skepticism and hope.
I don't believe him. No. I don't believe he's coming here just for... maybe... just the politic things. I don't believe him.
He is one of the keys who can manage or who can get good relations between two religions. So I think it will be a good visit for him to be here.
The Pope's journey has stirred emotions in Turkey. Before he arrived here, a gunman fired shot outside the Italian consulate, saying he wanted to strangle the Pope. And in another sign of security fears, the Pope is moving around in an armored limousine, leaving behind his panoramic Popemobile. And the few demonstrators who did turn out were kept well away. The Pope's most delicate engagement may be yet to come. On Thursday, he's expected to visit an historical site claimed by both Muslims and Christians. And then he will visit the country's most famous mosque, a pilgrimage which could tilt the balance of religious tolerance either way. Alessio Inci, CNN, Ankara.
So how closely are you following the Pope's visit to Turkey? I mean, it's big news for a number of reasons. I have some thoughts on this, and I'm very interested to see what's going to happen when he visits the Blue Mosque. Pope John Paul II, this was 1995, in one of his visits with Muslim leaders, I don't believe it was in Turkey, although it might have been, was captured in a photograph kissing the Quran. An odd gesture for the leader of worldwide Christianity, at least according to the way the Roman Catholic Church views the pontiff. I'd like to hear from you on the Pope's visit to Turkey. Are you watching it closely? Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Is it a big story to you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, Christians can disagree. The Pope goes in there, and because of statements made earlier this year, he goes in there and he has to... if not backpedal, at least stay off the subject of whether or not Islam is a religion of violence or a religion of peace. But, you know, Christians can disagree about that issue. They can. I happen to believe that Islam, as it's drawn directly from the tap of the Quran and the Hadith and the other holy writings, and as it's taught in the majority of the world, is a religion bent toward violence. I agree with, who was it? The emperor that the Pope quoted a couple months ago when he was in Regensburg. But Christians can agree or disagree on that. They can. It's really neither here nor there whether or not Turkey as a Muslim nation should be the first Muslim nation welcomed into the European Union. That's another thing that the Pope has kind of flip-flapped on. Before he was Pope, he was opposed to the Turkish entrance into the European Union, and now he seems to favor the Turkish entrance into the European Union. But, you know, Christians can disagree on that, too. If the Pope travels to Turkey, one of the few Muslim nations probably to which he can travel, even under the shroud of controversy, even under heavy security. Here he is saying a mass in Ephesus. If all he talks about is, oh, the common things that Christians share with Muslims, which when you get down to it is really a very short list. If all he does is go there and say nice things about the Turkish government, a la Rick Warren in Syria, if he goes there and touts the entrance of Turkey into the European Union, or if he at least stays away from the subject of whether or not Islam is a religion of peace or a religion of violence, he's wasted his time. Those may be important subjects, but this is a pope. Can you imagine St. Paul, or for that matter, let's talk about the Pope's alleged immediate successor. I'm not successor, his ancestor, at least theologically. Can you imagine St. Peter traveling to a pagan nation or even, although it's anachronistic, a Muslim nation and simply talking about the politics? Not availing himself of the opportunity to preach Christ and him crucified? Now, I don't know if the Pope did preach Christ or him crucified when he celebrated this Mass, or whether he will or not in the rest of his visit. I certainly hope he does, because if he doesn't, he's wasted his time. He's wasted an unbelievable opportunity. If he goes there and talks about the many things that we share with Muslims and fails to preach what Peter would have preached, what Paul would have preached, and that is, there is no other name given among men under heaven by which we must be saved than Jesus Christ. If he doesn't proclaim that message, he's not worth his mitre. At least on this visit. If he does preach Christ and him crucified, you know what might happen? Even though he's the Pope, he might not make it out of Turkey. And we might stop referring to him as Pope Benedict XVI and perhaps Benedict the Martyr. And that would be good. Then he would be following in the footsteps of St. Peter and St. Paul. But if he just goes there as a diplomat, it's a waste of time. Let's go to the phones. Catherine's on the line calling from her car. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well.
Good. Something you said about the Pope being caught in a photograph kissing the Quran made me think of a question, kind of that you may be able to answer. Didn't the Catholic Church come out a few years ago and say officially that we are all children of God and that Muslims and Jews and Christians are all children of God, you know, sort of along the lines of God's going to save them through his... I don't know if that's exactly what they were saying, and maybe you can answer that for me, but it would be an interesting point if the Catholic Church does indeed, because I've heard Catholics say that, oh, but we're all children of God, and whether that's just their own personal opinion or whether that's official teaching.
Well, I think I can clear it up for you, Catherine. Thank you. It's a very good question. In fact, it really is the question that is raised by Pope John Paul II kissing the Quran. Why would he do such a thing? Or why would Benedict go to Turkey and want to emphasize the similarities between Islam and Christianity? Well, it is an official teaching. It's a little more complicated than they're all going to heaven. In fact, if you'll email me at twilkin@kfuo.org, you can just send it to issuesetc@kfuo.org, and I'll send back to you something I wrote several years ago on what's called anonymous Christianity, which is a term of art used by, a school of thought in the Roman Catholic Church. But if you go to the Catholic Catechism of 1995, this view that Muslims of goodwill, without any knowledge or faith in Christ, can be saved, as well as Buddhists or any others, you will find it very clearly stated in the Catholic Catechism of 1995. I got the quotes and a little explanation in that piece on anonymous Christianity. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Be happy to send it to anybody who's interested in it. But to answer your question, yes, it's an official teaching. Deborah calls from her car. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I actually called with another question, but that phrase anonymous Christianity just made my stomach flip over. When you said that bothered me very much. I called because this is the first time I've ever listened to your program, by the way. It's wonderful. It bothered me when you were talking about the Pope's visit, which I have been following on the television, and you said he may go with the intention of being a diplomat and sort of placating and just talking about our similarities. But if he doesn't preach Christ crucified, then, I mean, that's the bottom line is that is a huge difference, obviously.
Yeah, what's he going there for?
The most important. I think he's missing a huge opportunity to be a witness for Christianity if he doesn't do that. And then you're right, then he is just a diplomat, and then he's not even being true to his own faith.
Deborah, thank you very much. Well, that's the point, really. Could he go as a diplomat? Yes, because the Pope is officially a head of state. The Vatican is a country in and of itself, and the Pope, as its monarch, is a head of state. He is. But he is also, at least according to Roman Catholic teaching, not only the representative of, but also the vicar of Christ, the representative of the Roman Catholic Church, but the vicar of Christ on earth. And if he goes merely in his role as diplomat, he's wasting his time. Ultimately, it may do some good, it may not. In the civil realm, But he has a far higher priority than he needs. I mean, who am I to give the Pope advice? But he has a higher priority that he needs to attend to. Anyone can go in and be a diplomat. Anyone can go in and say, oh, Islam is a religion of peace, or let's get Turkey into the European Union. Anyone can go in and do that. It doesn't take any courage to do that. It would take tremendous courage, even surrounded by armed guards, to go into this Muslim nation and preach Christ boldly, fearlessly, openly, as the only way of salvation for all men, to urge upon those Muslims, those unbelievers, the one way of salvation, Jesus Christ crucified and risen for the dead, for sinners. And as I said before, who knows? He might not make it out of Turkey if he did that. But he would be doing what he says he's called to do. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Audio Open Lines this Wednesday, the 29th of November. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Deborah, thank you very much for listening for the first time. I hope you keep listening. Jan's calling from Atlanta. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Todd. I just have a couple of comments. The first one, I'm on BibleGateway.com. I can't find it. But the first one I'm going to point out is Galatians 2:11, where Paul opposes Peter. When Peter came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he was clearly in the wrong. Before certain men came from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group. I think we err when we don't move our actions in line with Scripture. I'm a Lutheran. I don't think that I can, like you were saying earlier, give the Pope guidance on his itinerary or his agenda or his calling. But I can look at what Scripture says with respect to how we should function in our calling and our vocation. Yes, I've been following the whole turmoil with the situation in Turkey, and I think that it's important for us to know where we stand on an issue so we cannot be persuaded.
Jan, thank you very much, and thanks for listening down there in Atlanta. Well, look, if Paul is willing even to oppose Peter to his face and publicly over the compromise that Peter engaged in, not in what he said, but in what he did, of the gospel itself. That's the whole point of that interaction between Paul and Peter. Paul is saying here, look, he actually comes out and says it, what Peter is doing is not in step with the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ as the salvation for all men. He was making a distinction that the gospel does not permit us to make. And if Paul is willing to be so bold, then we ought to be so bold as well, wherever we see it, whether it's Pope John Paul II or with our own pastor or Pope Benedict XVI, whether you got a guy kissing the Quran or some guy who stands up and says, we all worship one God, and half the people around are nodding yes and half are puzzled. We should be so bold. Eric in Snowy, that is Olathe, Kansas, writes this via email. Pastor, I'm actually much more interested in how the visit will affect relations between the Catholic and the Orthodox churches. That's still the point of the visit, isn't it? Does the trip bode any change in that relationship? Well, if you would have asked me that 2 months ago, I would have said it could. But of course, as Sergei Trifkovic pointed out, Eric, yesterday on the program, while the Pope's original intent for his trip to Turkey was to find some mutual and some common ground and some detente, if you will, between the Western and the Eastern wings of Christianity, it's been overshadowed by this new political concern. Now, he still will have a chance to meet with the Patriarch of Constantinople. They call it Istanbul over there now. Whether or not it'll bode for any change? I don't know. The previous pope made it one of the top agendas of his entire pontificate to try and reforge a relationship with the Eastern Church. I find that very interesting as well. But I don't know if it's going to make a change, and I think it will be overshadowed by the whole issue. Here's the problem. You walk in there and you say, let's emphasize the similarities between Christendom and Islam. What are you doing to the poor Orthodox Christians who live in Turkey, who may still be trying to say Jesus is the only way of salvation? Kind of pulling the old rug out from under him. Carol in St. Louis writes this, certainly Peter and Paul fearlessly preached Christ, but perhaps the Pope is St. Peter's successor in Peter's less sterling moments. St. Peter did deny knowing Christ, and St. Paul tells us in Galatians that Peter attempted to compromise with the Jewish teachings. Well, that's true, Carol, but all of us are guilty of that, aren't we? Every single one of us. All I'm saying here about the Pope's visit is he has a great opportunity. It's a dangerous opportunity, but it's one that's unprecedented. Who else could get an invitation to go to Turkey? And who else could swing a public appearance, a public mass in Turkey? Who else could swing that? No one. Maybe not even the Bishop of Constantinople. The Pope can. There's his opportunity. If he fails to preach Christ, he's failed. The world is watching. The world is watching to see whether the Pope makes it out alive. The world's watching to see what he says about the European Union. The world's watching to see all this other stuff. And the Pope has the opportunity to set first things first. Jerry calls from South County. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, hi, Todd. Well, when the Pope says the Muslims are believers, we know that's a big lie. They don't believe in Jesus Christ. But that's elevating Islam, and that's not right. And he hasn't mentioned Jesus so far at all. They're all afraid. Every pope that goes out on these journeys, they're all afraid to mention Jesus. The Quran is false teaching, and Pope John Paul kissed that thing, which is, in my opinion, it's reaction, the devil's reaction to our Bible.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Our time runs short here. Well, I don't even think the Pope is referring to Muslims as believers. The whole point of anonymous Christianity is someone doesn't need to believe in Jesus or trust Jesus. They can be an anonymous Christian just by being whatever they are and being of goodwill. As long as they don't harbor any ill will toward Jesus, then they might be an anonymous Christian. Again, if anybody wants a further explanation on that in answer to the question to our first caller here during that segment, just email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org, and I'll be happy a little later today to send you a copy of a little piece I wrote on anonymous Christianity, full with quotes from the 1995 Catechism of the Catholic Church. Now, we will continue this issue a few minutes after the break. Happy to do it. Take your phone calls as well and your email during the break, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. And then we're going to talk with Janice Krause of Concerned Women for America about several issues: the rise of unwed mothers, the drop in teen pregnancies, or at least what appears to be that, a new oral contraceptive for men they're hoping for, and the over-the-counter sale of Plan B, the so-called morning-after pill. A little bit more audio open lines right after this.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc. Who is this Jesus in whom the Christian Church professes faith? What has he accomplished? What is his relationship to God the Father? What is the human problem related to this Jesus? And what is necessary for salvation? How the early church struggled with these five questions is the subject of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, The Great Jesus Debates. You can read a chapter on our website, issuesetc.org, or find out more about The Great Jesus Debates by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. How did the Gnostic, Arian, Christological, and Pelagian controversies influence the development of the historic Christian creeds? Find out with The Great Jesus Debates, 1-800-325-3040, or issuesetc.org. The Great Jesus Debates, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November.
Supporting organizations that assist women in need seems like a good idea, unless you're a member of a radical abortion advocacy group and the organizations assisting women are pregnancy resource centers that offer life-giving alternatives to abortion.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The radical abortion advocacy group NARAL Pro-Choice America opposes congressional efforts to provide aid to pregnancy resource centers that give free medical care and assistance to women facing an unplanned pregnancy. Despite the rhetoric of choice, NARAL and other abortion advocacy groups seem to undermine any other choices except abortion.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org. That's sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Hi, Christian here. I am learning every day. Sometimes I see something I want. Do you big people see things you want? I do. I am almost 8 months old, and I am learning to use my hands. I grab what I want. Do you big people do that? Do you see something and think, I have to have that? Does your little mind say, I want it, I want it, I want it? I don't think about it. Babies don't think. I don't know if it will hurt me. I don't care. I want to have it. Are you big people like that? Then, mean old daddy and mean old mommy take it away from me. Christian, darling, you can't have that. It will hurt you. Oh, spare me. Do you big people get mad when you don't get what you want? Do you talk at work about how dumb the boss is because he didn't give you what you want? Do you say, if you don't give me what I want, I'm out of here? Do you throw a tantrum when you don't get what you want? That's what I'm going to do. I am going to kick and punch and cry. And now, mean daddy and mean mommy, I'm going to show you. I'm holding my breath.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 29th of November. It's Audio Open Lines, Issues Etc. We're getting your thoughts on the Pope's visit to Turkey, probably maybe the most friendly Islamic nation to the West, which isn't saying a lot given the reception that he's been receiving there. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. You know, it's interesting that the Pope is actually there in a region wherein a lot of the major issues of Christianity were fought over and blood was shed over them and much ink was spilled over them and lives were put on the line in the first five centuries of the Christian church. He's there where it happened, where in the footprints of St. Paul, who was bold to say that he was determined to know nothing except Christ and him crucified among the Corinthians and preach nothing but Christ and his cross among the Galatians in that whole region there. And of course, that set off controversy after controversy. Who is this Christ? How is he the only Savior of all men? That's the subject of our Issues Etc. book of the month for November, called The Great Jesus Debates, Four Early Church Battles About the Person and Work of Jesus. You know, there's really nothing more important to argue about. The book is $14.99 plus shipping and handling. You can find out more about The Great Jesus Debates by going to our website, issuesetc.org. It's right there on the homepage. Or you can call Concordia Publishing House and ask them about the book. 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. And again, our website address, issuesetc.org. Coming up in just a few minutes, Janice Krause of Concerned Women for America will be our guest. We're going to talk to her about unwed motherhood and the decline of the teen birth rate. Mark Tooley will be our guest a little bit later. Rick Warren, kind of like the Pope, is making a largely diplomatic, or had made a largely diplomatic visit to Syria, among some other countries, and is catching a lot of flack for some of the things he said over there. We'll hear what Rick Warren had to say, and we'll get the reaction from Mark Tooley, who wrote a column about all this called Purpose-Driven Terrorism. Jeff Dunn and Craig Bubeck will join us to talk about Dan Brown's worldview at 4:30, and then from 5 until the end of the program, more audio open lines. We'll talk about the war on Christmas and the men who are stepping up, men and women who are stepping up as presidential hopefuls for 2008. We'll get a Fox News report on both of those issues.
Women are becoming sexually active around the age of 17. By the time they leave their teen years, almost all of them are sexually active. They may be living with someone. And they're not getting married until their late 20s. So that is going to result in more unplanned pregnancies to women who are not married.
That's Sharon Camp. She's president and CEO of the Guttmacher Institute, commenting on the latest figures regarding out-of-wedlock births and an apparent decline in the birth rate among America's teens. We're going to be talking with Janice Krause about that, among some other things, a new oral contraceptive for men that some people think is in the works, and then the over-the-counter sale of Plan B, the so-called morning after pill. Janice Krause is a regular guest. She's senior fellow of the Beverly LaHaye Institute for Concerned Women for America, based in Washington, D.C. Janice, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Oh, thanks so much. I always enjoy being with you.
Well, you've seen the numbers on unwed mothers and the apparent decline in the teenage birth rate. What do you make of all of it?
Well, I think there's some very good news for us. As a matter of fact, teen births are way down, as are abortions. And I think that is probably the major victory that we have had in recent years. It's very obvious that abstinence programs are working. And when you talk to Sharon and some of the other people from Planned Parenthood and CECUS and all of those groups from the left who depend on these kinds of behaviors to keep their organizations going, they, of course, sing a different tune, but there's no way of getting around the actual facts that are in the report that was recently released. And I just find it very, very encouraging, because everybody who is a careful examiner of the data, and those of us who compile that data and analyze it, agree that abstinence is behind these drops in teen births.
So I was concerned when I heard about the decline in the teen birth rate, because I thought to myself, that could not only be good news, it could be bad news. It could mean that more teens are having more open access to abortion on demand, but your figures don't indicate that.
Oh, no, no, no. The abortion rate is dropped at the same rate that the teen birth rates are dropping. So, you know, the drop in teen birth does not have anything to do with abortion. And there's a new study coming out next week that will show that. I can't write about it yet, because it's not for public distribution yet, but I have an advanced copy, and it's a government report that's going to say that abstinence is unquestionably the reason for these drops. And you know, when you hear so often, oh, the teen pregnancy rates or unwed births are going up, well, the unwed births are from the 20-something women who are using abortion as birth control. The teen births are dropping just very dramatically.
How would you respond to someone who says what is indicated by the apparent drop of the teen birth rate is not a success of abstinence, but a success of getting contraceptives into the hands of our nation's teens, so that they can use them, since they're, as the Guttmacher Institute CEO and president said, nearly all of them, those were her words, nearly all of the young women by 17 are sexually active?
Well, she's just plain wrong. You know, the data does not bear that out. you have to completely distort what the facts are to come to that conclusion. The truth of the matter is abstinence is working, and that, of course, threatens the comprehensive sex education programs that are so entrenched. But we're finding in the places where abstinence programs are in place, we are seeing that's where we're seeing the drops. And I think that is just so encouraging to us, and, of course, it's discouraging to everybody else because they look at those and they say, oh, my goodness, there goes our pathway to the federal trenches where we're getting all this money and support for our programs, which say, you know, teens can't really control their hormones and they're all going to be sexually active anyway, so let's distribute condoms. But, you know, anybody with any experience at all knows that condoms are not the solution. Even married couples are not consistent users when they depend on condoms. And all you have to do is look at the sex trafficking problem and the habits of prostitutes. They, you know, they get more money from the guys if they're willing to not require the guy to use a condom. It's not something that is preferable. And so we can't expect that teens who are sexually active and promiscuous are going to be consistent users of condoms. That just defies all common sense and logic.
How do you explain the rise in unwed mothers? You mentioned a little bit of that before, but go into some more depth, if you would, Janice.
Well, what we're seeing is that 20-something women are being more promiscuous, and therefore they are getting pregnant, and they are willing to have children because, you know, they're reaching the end of their period of fertility, and they want to have children, and so they are the ones who are having the children out of wedlock. They, for the most part, are employed and are able to afford the children, or else they are single mothers who are having sometimes 2/3, 1/4 abortion and are relying on abortion for birth control. And so when they decide to have a child, you know, it's a choice. And it's a method, and they're using abortion for their birth control.
This entire week, the news has been all abuzz about a so-called oral contraceptive for men. Apparently, at least according to the latest reports, it's something that they're hoping to develop. What are your thoughts on this, Janice?
Well, they think they're going to get it to the market in about 5 years, and apparently it is a single dose that a man can take a few hours before having sex, and within half a day, then it's completely the effect is erased. And so you don't have a dependency on hormones, and that, I think, is very attractive to men. What it does, basically, is stop the muscle, which takes the sperm along in the body. And so it's a very user-friendly kind of method of contraception, and is going to be, I think, very, very popular if it's true, because basically it's one dose, it's hormone-free, and it prevents the sperm from ejaculating, basically.
Let's hear another subject here, and this has to do with the over-the-counter sale of Plan B, the so-called morning-after pill. And this is a report from CBS News. Let's listen together, and then I want your thoughts on it, Janice.
Before you move along, though, let's go back to that male contraceptive, because
okay.
I want your listeners to get a very important point. While I think this might be good for couples who are married and believe in contraception, it certainly will enable couples who are promiscuous to think that they are engaging in behavior that's going to be consequence-free. And that's one of the problems I see in our society today. We have far too many people who think that they can have sex without consequences. And we know for sure that there are emotional and spiritual and moral consequences that are inescapable. And so anytime you have a development like this that will enable more of so-called free sex, we're going to see some very detrimental effects on our culture. And, you know, it's not a prevention for sexually transmitted diseases either.
Okay, then in other words, culturally, societally, could we expect a similar, what should we say, cascade of negative results as to when the pill was introduced?
Oh, I think it's almost inevitable, because it's going to allow men to be very confident as they go out and engage in so-called free sex.
Janice Krause is our guest. She's Senior Fellow for the Beverly LaHaye Institute for Concerned Women for America, based in Washington, D.C. Let's hear the CBS report, the CBS News report on Plan B, the morning after pill.
A baby was in the plans for Lori Kerfern and her husband, just not right away.
We had a condom break, so we were kind of like freaked out.
The morning after, she decided to take Plan B. At the time, it was only available by prescription at the clinic where Kerfern worked. Now, that's changed. Plan B is available over-the-counter to anyone over 18. Minors still need a prescription.
It's going to be inconvenient in that the pharmacist has to check the ID.
Plan B is a high dose of the same hormones found in birth control pills. It prevents pregnancy if taken within 72 hours. It's not to be confused with RU486, an abortion-inducing drug.
According to Dale Steinberg of Planned Parenthood, last year, clinics provided 1 million doses of emergency contraception.
Emergency contraception can prevent up to 1.5 million unintended pregnancies in this country each year and would prevent 800,000 abortions in this country each year.
When the restrictions were lifted last week, drug makers had to repackage Plan B for over-the-counter sale. Some pharmacies are still waiting for them to arrive.
I think it's going to open up opportunities for people to make better decisions about parenting. Like, I know for me, it was a wake-up call.
A wake-up call that came with a Plan B. Dr. Sean Kniff, CBS News.
All right, Janice, I want your reaction to that story, first of all. What's your initial reaction to a story about how great it must be to have an over-the-counter access to the morning after pill?
Well, my initial reaction is to just be absolutely furious, because this is the tactic that they all use. Number one, they start out with a married couple, right? They want a baby, but not just right away. And so they frame the whole thing in a context that's very warm and cozy. You know, you've got a long-term relationship here, so, you know, let's have a little sympathy for this couple. When the truth of the matter is, so often this Plan B emergency morning after contraception is a means of an older man being able to have sex with a younger woman and not have to face up to any consequences. Or promiscuous couples can engage in sex anytime they want to and, oh, just go out and get a pill the next day. And it's being sold with such soft kind of rhetoric, like what we heard in that advertisement, which completely cloaks the fact that we're talking about a drug that is a very potent drug. You know, to get a normal birth control pill, which is a high potency hormone, you have to have a doctor's prescription and you have to be under a doctor's care. And in order to get that prescription renewed, the woman has to go back and make sure that the pill has not had an impact on her blood pressure and all sorts of other counter indicators. Well, with the morning after pill and over-the-counter sales of this Plan B, you have a very high dosage of the same hormone that is required to be a doctor's prescription in a much lower dose with the birth control pill. So you have teenagers, preteens, even in some instances, able to buy this, because who's going to govern or be able in any way to control who's going to go into that drugstore and buy this over-the-counter drug? Mainly it's going to be men buying it for women who are need better protection than that.
This is my concern. I'm the father of a teenage girl, and she's 15. And this strikes all sorts of, I mean, I've been living this last year or so with pretty much a constant coronary going on. But this makes it even worse because, as you just mentioned, it's not necessarily going to be the teenage girl who goes in and buys this. The pharmacist might say, no, I can't sell it to you.
Right,
it could be
will.
A 20-year-old man.
Right. And there will be an underground industry of men who are going to make money, go in and buy it and then sell it on the street corner, sell it at the schools, and provide it to guys who are going to be taking advantage of girls. And, oh, here, take this in the morning and you'll be okay.
Okay.
It's such a false view. And it sells the whole idea. It's just another way that the culture says sex is recreation, that sex is something that you can indulge in without any consideration for a relationship or any consideration for the other person who is a partner in this act. And it conveys a complete separation of your behavior for morale, from morals or any kind of ethical considerations, and it flies in the face of any kind of decency or respect for other people. It is just very offensive, I think, at the outset. Everything about it is very offensive, not to mention all of the health things that are of concern for those of us who care about the well-being of the women who will be taking this drug.
Should I be equally concerned as a father of a young lady about what we were talking about before, about the easy access to a male contraception pill and so-called consequence-free sex?
I would hope that you have trained your daughter so that it will not be a personal problem for you. But I think culturally we have to be very concerned, because your daughter's friends and others who are in not quite so healthy a family situation are going to be faced with very challenging cultural influences on their children. And this is just another way that the culture is disintegrating around us. And we cannot protect our children. They're going to be coming up against things that they are ill-prepared to handle. And I don't care how good a father you have been or I have been as a mother. We are raising children who are facing problems that are completely different from any problem that has and challenge that has ever faced a previous generation. And this is just another example of how we are raising a generation of children who are not going to be allowed to have a childhood, because we have to discuss these kinds of things with them. We have to introduce them to things that we would prefer to postpone talking about until later in life.
Coming back to the first subject we discussed, the rise of unwed motherhood, and Kia writes this from Birmingham, Alabama, with several questions, in particular about the rise of unwed motherhood among the 20-somethings. She says, I was wondering if the reason that you see an increase in illegitimate births among women who are in their 20s is because the women have experienced abortions and birth control while in their teens, and while continuing to practice irresponsible sex, they are unwilling to subject themselves to contraceptives or the trauma of abortion. Again, that's her first question. What are your thoughts there?
Well, it points up the kinds of dilemmas we face when we let loose of the moral anchors and the biblical anchors that hold us to truth. When you start compromising and when you let go of those kinds of things, you face situations that have no good solutions.
Kia also writes this, also, I was born in the 80s and grew up in the 80s and 90s. I was promised that more sexual education for children, the more they received, the less likely they would be to have premarital sex, unwanted pregnancies, or to contract an STD. However, it seems that the opposite is true. We have told our children to copulate but don't procreate, but the law of nature prevails. Your thoughts on Kia's comments there?
Well, she certainly has hit the nail on the head, but I would say it wasn't limited to the 80s. They're still preaching that same gospel today. There's nothing, you know, that has gone away in that regard, because that same message is being sung and sent out to our young people today.
Is there anything that can be done about the morning after pill vis-a-vis the FDA? They're the ones who actually approved it for over-the-counter sale. They're the only ones who can pull it off the counters, get it back behind the counter, and under a doctor's prescription. Is there anything that can be done?
Well, we're working on that. Your listeners can be very aware that pro-life organizations and pro-marriage, pro-family organizations like Concerned Women for America are very much on the front lines and working at these kinds of things. We are constantly working toward that end. And I think what we're seeing with teenagers today is probably the brightest light on the horizon. I think young women today, I'm talking about teenagers now, have seen some of the results of promiscuity. They have seen some of the results from abortion. They've seen some of the results of divorce and all the things that have broken down the family in America, and some of the things that have come as a result of cohabitation and promiscuity, and they're saying, I want no part of that. For me, I don't want to go through what I've seen my friends go through and what I've seen my older brothers and sisters or my parents or whoever. They have seen all that. Plus, I think they have seen the greater technology with the sonograms that really is a baby there. And so when you engage in premarital sex, you are potentially creating a human life. And I think they're much more aware than previous generations that that's not just a glob of tissue, that's not just, a fetus that's kind of in quotation marks there, but it really is a baby that's yet to be born, even from the outset. And I think that's a different perspective, perhaps, than some of their older brothers and sisters who bought into all the left's myths that, that's just a little glob of tissue. It doesn't mean anything.
Janice, with only 30 seconds, finally, these teens who, as you say, rediscovering abstinence are driving down the teen pregnancy and birth rate, they will soon be the 20-somethings and the 30-somethings. What do you think is on the horizon for this next generation of women?
Well, I think we'll see less of the kinds of things we're seeing today with the 20-somethings. These young women and men are committed to abstinence, and this is something that I think we can be very encouraged about, because that will have long-range ramifications when they are young adults instead of teenagers.
CWFA.org is the website address for Concerned Women for America, CWFA.org. Janice Krause is a senior fellow for the Beverly LaHaye Institute for Concerned Women for America, based in Washington, D.C. Janice, it's good to talk to you again. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Todd. Great to talk with you.
You know, one of the things that you can do is you can help us. You hear a lot of this news about the pro-life issues and the life issues, through issues, et cetera. You can help us defend life from beginning to end by joining our monthly or annual donor program. It's called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Now, for more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find there on the homepage a picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Click on that, and you'll get more information on the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Again, it's our monthly or annual donor program. Now, there are all sorts of benefits of becoming an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer. We've got that new level called the patron. Some of you have availed yourself of that opportunity as well. Benefits like monthly tapes and books and transcripts. To find out more, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and we'll also send you the new I Have Issues t-shirt for new members or current and renewing members of the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. We have a goal of 300 members by the end of this year. We're at 245 last time we checked, so you can help us get there, and that's issuesetc.org. You'll also find there at our homepage a picture of the I Have Issues t-shirt, both the front and the back. Now, you can join by going to the website issuesetc.org or by check. Write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. The address again, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. And you can call our resource line and join as well. That number, toll-free, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172, to join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. When we come back in the 4 o'clock hour, Mark Tooley is going to join us. Rick Warren went to Syria. He said some interesting things about the Syrian government, about the state of religious tolerance in that country. He caught a lot of flack for it. Mark Tooley was one of the first to notice. He wrote a column called Purpose-Driven Terrorism. And there's been a little bit of a kerfuffle after all of that occurred. Rick saying he didn't say it, and then he did say it, and we have some audio to start the next hour of what Rick Warren did say when he was in Syria. And we'll get Mark Tooley's reaction. He's director of the United Methodist Action Committee for the Institute on Religion and Democracy, based in Washington, D.C. We'll talk with him for about a half hour, and then Jeff Dunn and Craig Bubeck will join us to talk about Dan Brown's worldview. They've written a new book together called The Gospel According to Dan Brown. Stay tuned. We'll talk with Mark Tooley right after this.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.